Welcome, everyone, to the ProWrestling.net All Access Podcast. My name is Chris Shore, and I am here for your Ring of Honor Final Battle Audio Review. Ring of Honor holding their final pay-per-view, iPay-per-view of the year on December the 16th, 2012. And the first real iPay-per-view under control of the new booking, I guess you could say regime, which was just one guy, Hunter Johnson, who wrestled with Delirious, of course, taking over for Jim Cornette. First real opportunity for him to set the pay-per-view the way he wanted to set it up. And he did a good job. I mean, they had a good card on paper. It resulted in a good pay-per-view. I don't know that it was a spectacular pay-per-view. That's not a knock on it in the least, but it was kind of safe with how it came across to me. Some very good matches. I didn't see anything unnecessary in this as far as moves or anything like that, and especially in the main event of the Ladder Wars and in the new street fight that we had. Of course, anytime you have any type of no disqualification or a hardcore type setting, guys are going to take bumps that make you cringe and make you go, wow, was that really necessary? But nothing seemed out of place and just, you know, oh, there was no reason to do that. There was the one scary spot in the New York street fight where B.J. Whitmer basically went through a table head first and landed on his head. In the replay, you could immediately hear him say or see his mouth say, I'm okay. And all reports from the show say that that is the case, that he is fine. They even reported during the show that he had walked out on his own accord. So a very good show. They didn't take shortcuts. And as far as doing things to just wow the audience that were unnecessarily dangerous. And only one real newsworthy moment, one title change occurred on the show. It was the Briscoes winning the Ring of Honor Tag Team Championships for a record 8th time. They defeated Scum and Cedric Alexander for Priest Coleman. And this is a bad call. I mean, this is the one call on the show that I really disagreed with. Some surprised me more than others, but nothing that I was like, although they shouldn't have done that. I was wrong about a couple of finishes, but nothing that really made me turn my nose up except for this. And, you know, it's possible that they have a plan, and Hunter has a plan, and we're going to see it come out of the TV tapings, and, you know, if that's the case, so be it. But I just think that the Briscoes, at this stage in their career, and with them needing to rebuild that tag division, they did put the American Wolves back together tonight. I guess a little more news-breaking. Does look like Eddie Edwards and Davey Richards are back as the American Wolves. And so with them back, and, they need to rebuild that tag division. They've got some good teams there. The Bravados are sitting out there. They didn't wrestle, of course, wrestling the greatest tag team, which I don't think there's much gas left in those guys. But nevertheless, they're still there. You've got, again, Whitmer and Titus. Titus on a team. Bobby Fish and Kyle O'Reilly, at least for this match, for this show, were tag teams. So they have tag teams sitting out there. I just don't know if the Briscoes on the top of the pile is the most exciting thing right now. I think they're very over. I understand why you think that's the best call. But this was an opportunity for them to take some chances here. The television championship was not on the line, which we incorrectly reported earlier that it was. From watching my Twitter feed, I wasn't the only person confused about that. But there wasn't a TV title match. There were really only two titles on the line, the World Championship and the Tag Team Championship. World Championship not changing hands, came with being the beating of Jericho in that Ladder Wars match. We'll talk about it in a minute. But, yeah, so they moved the title, and I thought this was an opportunity for them to take the chance. With Steve retaining the championship especially, I thought this would be a good time to get CNC Wrestle Factory, if you will. I hate calling that, but Cedric Alexander and Priest Coleman, I thought, get an opportunity to give them a title shot, see what they can do with it running at the top. Let teams like the Briscoes and the Wolves chase them. Let these guys get some good wins over some of those teams and build them up and make them into a special team. I think you'd be surprised at what these guys do together. But instead, they went with the Briscoes. We'll see what they have planned for. But it was the only move on the show that I just turned my nose up at and went, why did we do that? Or why did they do that? You know, I don't understand what the purpose of that was. Other than that, I highly recommend the show. I think I would give it a good, solid B, as in boy, at this point. It didn't wow me, It didn't blow me out of the chair. Like I said, it wasn't an outstanding pay-per-view, but it was better than just average. It was good, and it was solid from start to finish. Every match made sense. I thought they were booked logically, save for the tag title finish. The big spots were ROH big and not crazy big, which is good. You know, some of their spots are more dangerous than say the WWE would take. They didn't necessarily make them wrong. Most guys are able to do those spots without any problems. Like, again, anything that made me freak out and go, that was completely unnecessary and want to go after Ring of Honor management. And I want to say just real quick before I talk about the show how much I do appreciate what Ring of Honor management has done over the past few months. We were very critical of them for a long time, but right from the start, Ring of Honor was in a bad place and seemed to be going downhill as fast as humanly possible. They have made a creative change. They have signed a hosting deal, but a video hosting deal with, I believe it's pronounced Ooyala, O-O-Y-A-L-A, I believe is the name of the company. The feed tonight was outstanding. It was a great feed. I was really impressed with how slick it looked. If TV can look that slick when they're done with it, they'll be in good shape. Jason and I have talked about this, Jason Powell and I, and he doesn't want it to look too slick, he doesn't want it to look WWE slick, and I don't either. I want it to be a little grungier than that, but the picture was just very clear. I thought they did a better job of cutting cameras. There were still some moments where you wonder if the guy calling the camera shots has ever watched wrestling before, but it's better than it's been in the past. And again, I thought all the shows were all the matches were well booked, were well thought out. And so I wanted to take a moment to give kudos to Ring of Honor management for not giving up on this thing. They invested money to fix the night pay-per-view. They made a change of creative. We were told by Joe Popp, when we did a conference call with him earlier this year, that they were looking to make sure that they were in HD starting in 2013. When that budget came out, that was going to be their big pitch. I don't know if they've been successful in getting that approved or not. I know it's not started yet, but for all we know that's been approved, it's just waiting to get plugged in. Maybe it hasn't been approved yet. If they're able to get that show into HD, the pay-per-views are able to maintain this quality, and the booking continues at the rate it's going, I think Ring of Honor's got a real chance to make a comeback and settle itself in firmly as a legitimate contender in that top of the indie range. They're not going to ever compete with WWE. I doubt they ever compete with TNA, though arguably some of their house shows, they're already competing with TNA in some markets. But as a whole, I do think TNA is still a bigger company. I don't think the Ring of Honor can ever get there, but they can establish themselves as the king of the indies, and not just the default king of the indies because they have TV and all that sort of thing, but the real king of the indies because they've earned it, that they can stay on this path. So, thank you, Ring of Honor Management, for listening to fans, for listening to journalists, for listening to all the people who want to see that company succeed, and realizing that we want to see the company succeed, and taking some of the things that various people have identified as issues that need to be fixed, and going after those things and fixing them. Keep up the good work. It showed off tonight in Final Battle. So let's talk about the show. Again, it was December the 16th, 2012. It was live from the Manhattan Center in New York, New York. And we opened the show with a video recap of the long history of Kevin Steen and El Generico, a very cool video that did a good job of setting that up for people who weren't familiar with everything that's happened with them. Kevin Kelly, and I believe the guy's name was Caleb Stelzer or Stelzer. His first name was certainly Caleb. I did not catch his last name, and I looked up to see what it was, and it faded off the screen just as I looked up, and I thought I saw Stelzer. So if I've got his name wrong, it wasn't meant to be, not meant to be insulting, not meant to blow him off as unimportant. I just missed it and never got an opportunity to go back and see it. There are DVR functionality, supposedly, with this new setup that you'll be able to rewind and see whatever you want. I obviously, covering it live, didn't want to take a chance for an announcer's last name. So I don't know if that's right, but I will go back and check and fix it in the report accordingly, but not here, obviously. So if I said his name wrong, please don't send me hate mail. It was an honest mistake. I'm not trying to diminish the kid. But he and Kevin Kelly checked in on commentary at ringside. They ran through some of the matches, set them up with hype, and then as I put in my report, the feed, at that point you could tell them after the feed looks great.
I was very impressed with how it looked when it came on. We got opening introductions for the first match, and our first match of the night, Roderick Strong defeating Michael Elgin at 11 minutes and 31 seconds. The House of Truth breakup, I guess, officially, if you will, even though all these guys have fired Truth at this point. Rhino's not working for Truth anymore. Both of these guys have kind of fired Truth and directly fired Truth. I don't think we've seen the Headbangers in a while. They were the Truth team or whatever it was. I forget what they were, but they were dressed all black again. Unmasked it, and now they're the Headbangers again. And, but I don't think they're with Truth Martini anymore. But anyway, these are the two feathers in the cap, of course, of the House of Truth faction. Martini did not come out with either guy, but he did come out about 90 seconds into the match. And no matter who hit a big move, he was celebrating. He would go over the microphone and go, "Hey, what about Elgin? Did he get stunned?" And then Strong would come right back with a big move and he'd come over, "What did I tell you? Robert Strong is the real deal." No matter what, he was cheering on the victor. So when the finish came and Roderick Strong, you had Truth Martini threw the House of Truth or the Book of Truth into the ring. Michael Elgin picked up Roderick Strong for a powerbomb, finisher. Strong had the book in his hand. He did not throw it to Strong, by the way. He kind of threw the book in the middle of them. Strong is the one that got his hands on it. He hit Elgin in the head with the book, tossed to the floor, and then followed up with a strong throw for the pinfall victory. 11 minutes and 31 seconds, good match, a good opener, a good choice for an opener. They were hot, they moved quickly. Elgin is very good, Roderick Strong's pedigree, there's no question about him in the ring. And they had a good opener. They didn't do too much, they got the crowd hot, they didn't make it impossible for other people to follow them. And when you look at the rest of the matches and how they win, and how really the next couple of three matches were of a lower quality than the opener, and yet the opener was set up in a way that didn't outshine those other matches, even if they weren't necessarily as good. So a very good opening match from these two guys. Strong gained the victory over Elgin. I still think it's the blow off of the feud based upon what happened post-match. Post-match, you get Roderick Strong takes the microphone, or excuse me, not Roderick Strong, Truth Martini takes the microphone, introduces Roderick Strong again as the winner, and says that he is the only member of the House of Truth. Roddy takes the mic away from Truth. He says, I've told you once, I've told you a million times, I'm telling you again now, I'm not, you're fired, I don't want anything to do with you. He stole out of the ring. The Truth goes over and tries to help up Elgin. He says, Elgin, you know, get up, come on, say a man. And then he said, I love you, Elgin, and he wrapped his arms around him and hugged him, and it was just a stupid little moment. Elgin hugged him for a powerbomb, but Truth still has the microphone in his hand, straight with the mic, wait, just hear me out. Elgin let him stand up, and Truth starts chastising him. How dare you for getting rid of me? How dare both of you get rid of me? Neither one of you were anything until I came along. When I got here, Roderick Strong had been here for 7 years. After he teamed with me, he won the television and world championship. Do I think it's a coincidence? No, I don't. He asked Elgin how he won the, I think it was 2010 Rookie of the Year or Breakout Star of the Year, something like that, 2011. Get rid of Ward 1 in 2011 or Wrestle Force 5 on the 5th, maybe. I don't remember. But he just started listing up the things that Elgin had done while he was under Truth management and said that it was the ultimate slap in the face for those guys to turn their backs on him like they did. He said, but I'm here to teach you one more lesson. This is how a real man slaps another man in the face. And they slapped him in the face and so Elgin hit the power bomb or the bumper bomb on him and then a spinning back fist and not Truth out of the ring, but Truth takes a really great out of the ring bump. That's kind of the shtick. The problem I have with the finish is that, and the crowd kind of reacted this way too, it was like, well yeah, but Truth was the big man. I mean, like, Truth did the right thing in the sense of the manly thing. If you're going to back fist somebody, you just walk out and smack them in the face. You don't do it behind their back. And I realize he is not the sympathetic character here, but the way they set it up at the end, here's what a real man does, and when he does it, he's right. It's, you know, you don't stab somebody in the back. You just come out and say, hey, I'm taking up, you know, I'm pushing you out, and you just do it. That's, if you're going to do something like that, it's more honorable to do that than stab somebody in the back. It's not accusing him of stabbing him in the back of the story at that point. It's just, the way it played out, it rang funny for me to see the heel. Like, I felt bad for the heel. The heel was sympathetic here.
And unless they're trying to turn him, I don't understand what that was. It didn't make any sense. It didn't take anything from the match, take away anything there, but it just didn't make sense for Truth's character to be that way. I was kind of surprised by how that played out. Again, I expect this to be the final match for Roddy and for Elgin. It's certainly possible that they come back to this, but I don't think that's the case. I think that they are going to be done, or they are done with this at this point, and both of them will be moving on to something else. Next matchup was Jay Lethal versus Rhino. Jay Lethal defeating Rhino 9 minutes and 33 seconds. Steve Corino came out and joined commentary for the match, and Kevin Kelly linked Rhino and Corino together. Corino talked about discovering Rhino many, many years ago. And said that Rhino was just he wasn't really with them as much as it was. He was a mercenary, and he would do whatever for money, and they had money, so they would hire him. You know, he made it sound like they weren't, you know, anti-each other or against each other in any way. But it wasn't just, you know, like he was part of the group. He was a mercenary hired to do a job, and the job here was to destroy Lethal. Lethal beat him with a lethal injection after holding a Koji clutch for some time. Corino, fantastic on commentary again, putting the story out there, selling it right. He was great there. People were tweeting about it during the show and whatnot. But after the match is where everything really became important, Steve Corino took the mic and climbed up on the apron. He continued to insult Lethal and Lethal's mom, so something about he dated his mom. He got Lethal all worked up. Lethal dared him to come into the ring. Jimmy Jacobs ran out. Steve Corino's partner attacked Lethal from behind. They beat him down, held him up so that Rhino could gore him, and left Lethal lying in the middle of the ring. Corino took a mic and said that Lethal would never be in the main event because he didn't deserve to be in the main event. He was always a second level turd. This match was fine for what it was. The purpose was to set up the post match stuff. They did that okay. Obviously, they're going to continue with this feud with Lethal trying to get involved with Steve Corino as it moves forward from here. So this just was kind of a holding pattern situation. It is a little something, but mostly it was just to remind everybody that Lethal is after Kevin Steen and why he's after Kevin Steen. After that, we get a preview for the third match of the night. And one of the things that Ring of Honor did that I really liked, and it's something that I think should be done for all pay-per-views, you could probably get away with it in WWE or whatnot, but I like the idea of having a video before each match describing how we got there in case you've got, you know, a casual fan watching for the first time, say with a friend or someone who was only, you know, found only one or two television shows and liked what they saw, kind of like I did for the first time in 2010. I think I saw two or three, maybe three television shows before Final Battle of that year, and everything was pretty much set at that point. So it was, you know, I like the way they did this for everyone, including the third match of the night. R.D. Evans defeating Prince Nana at 6 minutes and 39 seconds. This match I thought might be entertaining, and it was. I gotta tell you, if I was surprised by anything, it was how well wrestled the match was. I mean, Nana looks very competent, and I've seen Evans wrestle. He doesn't have the traditional body of a wrestler. He's very, very, very thin, but he's very good. I mean, he's a real talent. It's a shame that he doesn't have the body to hold the level of mass that is needed to really succeed in this industry, because I like the guy. I mean, he's been hilarious in Chikara, and just very charismatic. He can draw good heat as a heel in Ring of Honor. He's also a heel to some degree in Chikara as well, but he is the consummate person that fans love to hate. I mean, that's really the best way to describe him. And he was very good here. Some really great wrestling on this. We got to see the return of Ernesto Cruz. I don't know if that's going to be a long-term thing or what, but he ran out at one point to try to get Marshall uninvolved in the situation, but Marshall left him knocked out. And then we had a ref distraction, and that allowed Evans, couldn't think of his name for a minute, that allowed Evans to hit a reverse Styles Clash for the win. I didn't see the setup for it. I missed it. It kind of happened really fast. But Evans wins, and he's celebrating in the ring. There's a commotion at ringside, and Tommaso Ciampa is out there trying to get his hands on R.D. Evans. screaming about, he'll be back soon, he'll be back soon. That is a great news. I didn't get a chance to look up before I started recording when, Ciampa's injury was and how long he was going to be out. It was a very serious injury, but I can't remember how long it was going to be before he came back. It's nice to know. I was thinking it was after the first of the year, but maybe that's just me trying to make my memory match what I saw on the show today. But good to have him back. If you're Ring of Honor, he's a great feather to have in the cap. An arrow in the quill is a better analogy. But he's a stud. The Macho Ciampa's got money written all over him, folks. Be ready for him to come back if you're new to Ring of Honor. So a fun little match there in the traditional comedy slash diva spot. It worked out really well. From there, we get a video recap of what's going on from Match 4, Wrestling's Greatest Tag Team, defeating Rhett Titus and BJ Whitmer 15 minutes and 26 seconds. This was a New York street fight. Wrestling's Greatest Tag Team begins their ring entrance. Titus and Whitmer attacked him from behind on the ramp. And then it became the comedy spot of the night because they started pulling out giant candy canes and tree ornaments and all kinds of silly stuff, including a fake tree to beat each other up with. Yes, it was your holiday gift-giving bashing, if you will, in the ring for this match. Strange in that sense. Not strange. It's something you kind of expect from wrestling. Once it happens, when they first pull the stuff out, you're like, what? Okay. You kind of go on with it from there because it's wrestling and you see these things. Fortunately, they got away from that. Really good heel moment when Wrestling's Greatest Tag Team had one of the guys in the ring and was beating on him, and the tree was still just lying there in the ring, and the fans start chanting for the tree. They dropped everything. Shelton Benjamin went over, got the tree, held it up in the air, and tossed it over the top rope to the floor, and the fans just crapped all over him. Just great heat. Great, really smart move by Benjamin there to know how to play that out. Finish on this game. This was the match I was talking about at the top of the show. BJ Whitmer going through the table head first, landing on his head from a belly-to-belly top rope superplex. He and Charlie Haas were on the top rope, jockeying for different moves. I wasn't sure who was going to take the spot. At one point, it looked like Whitmer was going to do almost like a side slam, maybe, and the table was way across the ring. My biggest fear was that they would hit it, but only Haas's head would make it, and so like the back of his head would hit the table when it first kind of hooked for it. I thought, they've got to jump at the same time and kick off harder. This is going to end poorly. But instead, Haas grabbed him, tossed him over backwards over the top of his head. Whitmer comes straight down on the top of his head. Looked like his knees touched the floor. Just a rough-ass bump. .NET member Zip is in attendance, or was in attendance for that show. Immediately sent me an email right afterwards saying it was the scariest bump. I think he said it was the scariest or second scariest bump he had ever seen, or maybe it was that two scary bumps. Something I can't remember exactly what it was, but just explaining how sick it was live. I can only imagine. It was awful to watch on television. I can only imagine what it looked like live and just happening there. But when you watch the replay, you can see him mouth, "I'm fine." He ended up, as the report came back, he ended up refusing medical care and left of his own, of course, and he wouldn't give that SOB Haas the satisfaction of knowing he had to see a doctor. He's fine. I think there are other sites already reporting that he was fine. I thought so then. It looks like he's okay, but a scary, scary moment. Really crazy spot. It was a great table spot, but a scary moment with Whitmer going through head first. It looks to be okay, and a fair match. It was a garbage match. It was a street fight. You had they pulled out all the stops. They had the neat little gimmick moments. It was entertaining for what it was. I don't like either one of these teams. I've always liked Titus, but he's not reached the potential I thought he had last year and even 2 years ago when I would watch him. I'm still not sold on Whitmer. I still don't get the love affair with Whitmer. I don't get the love affair with QT Marshall, however you pronounce his name. That was out earlier in the Evans Nana match. There's quite a few guys in Ring of Honor, new guys that I don't get. They have some of those moments, but I've seen a lot of them, if not all of them, already live. I just don't get it. I don't see the, they're not bad. I just don't see the appeal. And Wrestling Greatest Tag Team is just old. I don't mean old as in number of years that they've been alive old, though they're certainly higher up there than most of the people in Ring of Honor. But their act is old, it's stale, they were the babyface team and it was okay, and then they turned the heel and it was okay, and, you know, even the Briscoes got a little bit of rise out of them, but then he just didn't care anymore, and I think that's a lot of why I don't like the Briscoes carrying the titles right now. They were kind of damaged from that feud as well. Well, wrestling's very tag team would just keep backing, and they just suck the heat off of people and out of their feuds, and I've been very unimpressed with them as of late for quite some time, actually. So, neither team I cared that much about, but they put on a good match here, 15-minute match, pretty tough, brutal match, and, Wrestling Great Tag Team gets the win. I have no idea what's next for either of these teams, but watch TV when it comes back starting on Monday. From there, we get a recap of Jerry Lynn winning the Ring of Honor title from Nigel McGuinness several years ago. That led to our fifth match of the night. Oh, I'm sorry. When we got back, Whitmer was still in the ring when they finished playing the video highlight. Then they kind of had to talk and stall a minute while they swept out all the pieces of glass and all the little things from the previous match. But Whitmer was still selling to help carry him to the back. That was a little bit of a concern, but I also thought it might be a little bit of, let's sell it. We'll go ahead and sell it. But at the same time, let's just make sure you're okay. Just lie here, let's move your fingers, move your toes, do all these things, let's make sure you're okay. Now that we're safe, okay, we'll go ahead and move you. We know you feel fine, but let's just make sure. You don't get hit on the table, ass. Let's check it out. But anyway, we finally got ring introductions. Fifth match of the night, Mike Bennett, the prodigy, Mike Bennett defeating Jerry Lynn at 10 minutes and 7 seconds. Maria Kanellis, his fiance, and Brutal Bob at ringside. An okay match. Lynn is 49, and he's on his retirement tour, and he didn't phone it in. I don't mean to say he phoned it in, but he's not the Jerry Lynn of old, and he didn't go out there and kill himself, but he put on technically it was a very good match, very crisp and all those sorts of things, and just, again, I think it would be spectacular battle. I'm sure Mike Bennett is thrilled to have been a part of that for a legend like Jerry Lynn's last match with Ring of Honor. The finish on it came, you had Maria distracting him, Lynn went and grabbed her at the rope, she dropped down and hit like a hangman, and when he turned around, Bennett hit the box office buster for the win, for the pinfall victory. Jason and I talked about this in .NET Weekly, I talked about it in the preview, Lynn is not a guy who cares all that much about who goes over, he just wants to have a good match. I think he's happy with what he had here, and he should be. Mike Bennett got a rub off of the guy, and there's some questions about where Mike Bennett's going to be in the near future. I know that TNA is also interested in him, but I do believe he's WWE bound as soon as his contract expires. It's just a matter of time at this point. I really believe that it's just a waiting game for the contract to work itself out. Post-match, though, is when we got the fun stuff. You had Brother Bob and Mike Bennett continuing to want to beat up on Lynn. I think that the camera work was rough here, so I'm guessing a little bit, but I think Lynn ducked a clothesline. Bob was holding Lynn for a clothesline, and he ducked, Lynn ducked, and Bennett took out Bob, I think, but then Bennett got knocked down too. Like, there was kind of shoddy camera work at that moment. We didn't get the right shot. Bob's on his back. You got Lynn grabbing his leg for something. Maria comes over, spins him around. She just kind of shoves him. He grabs her. DDT. Big ECW chant breaks out in the crowd. And then he ends up hitting the cradle pile driver, his finisher, on Mike Bennett. Everybody got the big pop, got to go home happy. Well done spot to allow him to get in all that stuff. And kudos to Maria for taking the DDT there and giving an old ECW veteran a moment with that. He took a microphone, Jerry Lynn did, gave a farewell speech. He thanked Terry Silkin for believing in Ring of Honor and keeping it going when it was in bad financial trouble. He thanked all the boys in the back for treating him like one of the boys instead of an old man, even though he was an old man. And at that point, Nigel McGuinness came out with several of the younger guys. Michael Elgin was out, Cedric Alexander, Caprice Coleman. I remember those three. There were a few others, but I don't remember who. And he got in the ring. He took the microphone from Lynn. He told a story about how they had wrestled together when Lynn was already well known at that point, and McGuinness was still cutting his teeth. He said he came out, he got no reaction from the crowd, basically. He thought, wow, this is the worst crowd ever. Jerry Lynn's music hits, he steps to the curtains, and the place came unglued. He said several years later, they hooked up again. He came out, he got a good pop. He goes, I'll show this old guy. The music hits, Jerry Lynn comes to the curtain, and the crowd came completely unglued. He said, as far as for all the boys in the back, I can tell you, as far as we're concerned, you'll always be over. And then he gave him like a lifetime achievement award, like you would see at a Grammy ceremony or a, you know, an Oscar ceremony or whatever. And then handed the mic back over. Lynn got a little emotional. He didn't start crying. In fact, he even joked about it. He goes, there's no crying in wrestling, but you guys are making it hard for me to keep that rule. He thanked all the boys in the back. He thanked all the fans. He said that they were the reason, the fans were the reason why these guys did it, and why, you know, that the louder they are, the more the boys want to do for them because they appreciate them being there to see them and see what they do. So, and thank everybody again. Put the mic down, walked out. Thank you, Jerry, Chance, and all those sorts of things. Just a really nice moment for him. I'm really happy for him that he was able to have that moment in a Ring of Honor ring to close out that part of his career. And I'm sure the one in March will be probably pretty tough. I hope to see the video of that speech. So I get a feeling he won't be able to keep the rule that night. He had a hard time here, and I think the last of last matches will kind of get to him a little bit. But everybody started to leave the ring before Nigel to get away. Jay Lethal made it to the ring. He started demanding that he was going to be involved. He was going to attack whoever the world champion was. Now, it didn't matter to him who won, but that was what he was going to do. And there wasn't anything that Nigel could do about it. They argued back and forth. Lethal claimed he spit on my mama card. And said, you know, what would you do if someone spit on your mom? Because you wouldn't just take it. You wouldn't just sit by. Neither am I. If, you know, either give me my match tonight or I'm going to get it. And again, Nigel would not. He said he was holding his ground. He was not going to give in here. He said Lethal should just sit back and watch the show because if Generico won, Jay Lethal would get the first match, the first chance to championship. Lethal responded by saying, so Kevin Steen spit on my mom, ROH spit on me, and now I've spit on you. And he spit right on Nigel McGuinness. Nigel went after him. They kind of, you know, had a hold of each other like they were getting ready to fight. Security ran in the ring, broke them up. Nigel McGuinness ordered Jay Lethal banned from the building. And that was it. We went to intermission from there off of that. This was the old swerve in wrestling. Because at this point, you know, I'm convinced, yeah, we're going to see Jay Lethal in the main event. He was banned from the building. That's the best way to make sure that these guys come back. I mean, if you ban them from the building, you're going to see them again. Nobody can check these guys out whenever they've been banned from a building. Never happens anywhere, anytime. What happened here tonight, we actually did not see any more of Jay Lethal for the rest of this show. Very surprised by that. I'm not necessarily upset, but certainly kind of caught off guard. We usually don't see it that sort of way. If you get banned from a building, that's pretty much so a guarantee you're coming back down that ramp at some point tonight, or at least jumping a guy in a parking garage, say, to go with what WWE did recently. At any rate, they only had about a 15-minute intermission, a very short intermission. The whole thing, the whole show from start to finish was about 3.5 hours, which is really good for Ring of Honor. I've done some 4.5-hour marathons. In fact, I think that very first final battle that I covered in 2010 was about a 4.5-hour escapade. And it was a lot of fun, but that's a lot of wrestling. I mean, that really is. Even with the intermission thrown in. I understand they have to do that because they've got to get the live crowd to have merch sales and all that sort of thing if they want to stay alive. I get it. But that's a tough thing to do. It's a tough thing to maintain interest when you have to wait that long. But well-paced show tonight. Again, they hit all their spots really well and put on a good show. And I like what they were doing here. When we came back from intermission, Mike Mondo makes his ring entrance. He was on crutches and had his foot in a boot. He broke his foot in a match with Mike Bennett. Oh, God, was it Best in the World, I think it was, when they had that match. Whenever it was, the last night pay-per-view, he broke his foot in that match with Mike Bennett. He's been rehabbing it ever since. He threw the crutches away, got in the ring, said that, you know, he was not done. He was going to be back. He didn't need the crutches anymore. He threw them away to show how tough he was. He said he broke his foot because he was Mike Mondo, that's why. and just really kind of keeping himself fresh in everybody's mind while he continues to heal this. Kyle O'Reilly and Bobby Fish made their entrance. Their match was already kind of hyped for next. They had shown the video of the feud before Mondo came out. Bobby Fish took the microphone, and I got to tell you, I was a little bit impressed with his mic work here. I thought that he delivered a solid promo here. He asked Mondo, he said, well, you know, we have it on good authority that Eddie Edwards is not going to make it tonight, and that means that Davey Richards has got a handicap match. And when we thought of a handicap, he was the first person we thought of, because look at you. He said, maybe you want to be Davey's partner since he was handicapped. That made Mondo get in his face, so Kyle O'Reilly attacked Mondo from behind. They beat up Mondo. Davey Richards runs out for the save. They beat up Davey Richards. Eddie Edwards runs out and just stops and looks at him. They're all laughing. I guess O'Reilly and Bobby Fish are laughing. They pick up Davey. They hold him for Edwards. Edwards shrugs his shoulders and super kicks, I believe it was O'Reilly, to the floor, and then that was the start of the match. They ended up hugging immediately, almost immediately, Davey and Eddie did. We had the reunification of the American Wolves, and right then the bell rang as these guys dived on both of, dove on Fish and O'Reilly on the floor. Finish on this comes American Wolves defeating O'Reilly and Bobby Fish at 12 minutes and 26 seconds. Finish on this comes, you've got Eddie Edwards trying to put Kyle O'Reilly in the Achilles lock, single leg crab sort of thing. O'Reilly fighting him. Davey Richards jumps off the top rope with a double stomp that allows Eddie to get him over and stomps on the back of his head until referee Tom Sinclair just stops the bout instead of O'Reilly tapping or anything like that. His referee stoppage at 12 minutes and 26 seconds. This was a good match, one of the better matches that I've seen with Davey Richards. He and Eddie both work this really fast-paced style that I'm not a big fan of sometimes. I thought that they worked well together here. This was, and Kyle O'Reilly certainly fits in that category as well. I thought this was a better-than-average match for them. Nothing here really made me groan or get bored or want to turn it off. It was bring it back. So like I said, I'm not a personal fan of that style. I think it's too much, too much on a big impact move and not enough on what that big impact move means. Not enough on telling stories in the ring and making me believe that that amazing thing that I just saw actually meant something, actually did some damage to the person, actually hurt the other person. And why would I expect them to come back from that? So that if they do, it's even more amazing. It's that sort of thing that this style that they work, I don't think, really gets across, and that's what I complain about, guys like David Richards not having good storytelling skill. Here, it worked a little bit. There were moments where I shook my head and said, there they go. But it's not anything criminal, not anything that was just wild and over the top. Pretty good match. And if you're a David Richards fan, I bet you like this match a whole lot. I really do. I don't mean that as a shot. It takes all types of the world to go around, folks. And I like some things. If you don't, you don't like things that I don't. That's how it works out. But a fair match for these guys. I guess this means that officially the American Wolves are back. That would be my guess at this point, based upon what they were doing. As we'll talk about here in just a minute on the tag title match, the Briscoes talked about rebuilding the division. And there's worse places you can start with a Ring of Honor crowd than starting with the American Wolves. That tag team is very, 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 very over. I know that Davey Richards and Eddie Edwards both enjoyed their time together doing that. Davey was very critical. One of the many things he was critical about with Ring of Honor was breaking up the American Wolves. He thought that was their best act, was for the two of them to stay together. And it looks like they're going to get what they want here and be able to be together at least for a while going forward. And then we'll have another breakup down the road. It's pressing, man. Relationships don't last very long. You know how that works. Seven match of the night. The confusion match for me, I honestly did think this was a TV title match. I was wrong, as we found out when I saw our announcement. Like I said, based upon my Twitter, nice to know I was in some comfort. I wasn't the only person who was wrong. A lot of people thought it was a title match as well, but it wasn't. It was Matt Hardy defeating Adam Cole in a non-title match in 11 minutes and 41 seconds. So, of course, Cole continues to be Ring of Honor Television Champion, which, you know, was my whole thing was, oh, well, Cole's going to win because it's a title match, and they're not going to put the title on Hardy. There's no reason to. Obviously, when it wasn't a title match, I had to rethink my position on the fly. Had I realized that going in, I probably would have picked Hardy nonetheless. Because you can expect almost Vince to come back to it. I figured this was going to be a one and done since it was for the title. With it not being, I expect to see more matches. In fact, I expect probably the blow-off match to actually be for the television championship. And then that would be the one where you kind of expect them to blow it off and Hardy not win. Cole get his big win over Hardy to get that big rub going forward. Adam Cole's name is one that continues to circulate in the sense of the guys that WWE would want if they're going to sign any of these guys. He is probably the very top of the list, or certainly in the top two or three for WWE, at least out of Ring of Honor, for sure. They may have some other guys somewhere that, you know, are not necessarily the greatest wrestlers that have that big WWE look that they like so much that they might rank higher. But certainly from the guys from Ring of Honor, it does sound like Adam Cole is the one that they are most interested in. So I'm kind of surprised they're giving him the big rub here, knowing that he could be on his way out the door. But, you know, as long as he's under contract, as long as he's not signed with WWE, you've got business to do, and what you got to do business. So Matt Hardy winning here. The silly part of this match coming when Matt Hardy hit like four side effects in a row. He ended up hitting one on the apron, and he got back in the ring with Cole and just hit side effect after side effect after side effect. It was three or four in a row. Cole's still able to kick out. You pretty much have just ruined the side effect as a legitimate move because it's like punching him four times, and he's still able to kick out. What's the big deal? It's the punch. So I didn't understand that moment, that ring psychology moment at all. But the finish on this comes, you've got Adam Cole going for the Florida Key, and Matt Hardy reached out, grabbed the referee, pulled the shirt over his head, calling the referee supposed to be blinded. He hit a back kick that was a low blow, and then another low blow, and then he ended up hitting Cole. Or no, he grabbed him and hooked him for like an inside cradle small package. That the ref finally got his shirt back over his head and counted for the pinfall victory. Hardy left the ring pretty quickly. Cole was in the ring and raged. He left the ring pretty quickly. It was okay match. They're going back to it looks like, obviously, so I understand why they didn't do more than they did. This was kind of a victim of circumstance for me. I expected it to be a one and done, so I expected more of the match. But that's, again, part of that is because I misunderstood the stipulation. So I'm not trying to hate on this match, but it is kind of weird to go back now and try to figure out exactly what I thought about it, because it was, it didn't, the match itself wasn't set up to meet my expectations. So, but a good match. I don't mean to sound disparaging about Chris and Lewis. A good match, one worth sitting through. Not a spectacular match, but they're going back to it. And quite frankly, that kind of gives me some hope that what we're going to see next from them is going to be really good, because it's not that bad. I mean, it wasn't a knock you down and take your breath away sort of match, but it was pretty good. From there, we went into our eighth match of the night, and this is our new Ring of Honor World Tag Team Champions, the Briscoes, defeating Scum of Steve Corino and Jimmy Jacobs, and Cedric Alexander and Caprice Coleman. Beat both of those teams 7 minutes and 5 seconds, folks. 7 minutes and 5 seconds on a triple threat match for the Ring of Honor Tag Team Championships. Put a promo afterwards saying we're going to bring Honor back to the tag division with a 7-minute match. I have to see a little bit. It seemed a little bit out of place to have the shortest match on the card. I mean, they were even shorter than, let's see, I think they are. Where is that? Evans and Prince Nana went 26 seconds short. You got two managers wrestling, and maybe 26 seconds less than your tag team championship match. Come on, right? You got to poke fun at that at least. I like this match. It's wild. Do not read my report if you want to know what happened in this match. There were guys every damn where. They were flying all over the place. It was nuts. I mean, there was just no chance. At one point, I started, and I was like, you know what, I can't do it. I'll just wait for maybe there's a settle down moment. When they settled down, they had to finish. Nice moves from all of the guys. Scum got out of there pretty quick. Again, the Briscoes cut a promo saying that they wanted to be fighting champions, so they would issue any team that wanted to try for the titles, all they had to do was ask. But if there was one team that deserved the title shot without having to ask, they were going to give it out of respect. And they said that Cedric Alexander and Caprice Coleman would be their first title defense for the Briscoes to be with that team because they had deserved it, they appreciated it, they shook the hands of Cedric and of Caprice, and then that was the end of the segment. I don't know if we're seeing the setup here for a heel turn from Caprice and Cedric or what they have in mind. I mean, they've set it up for that if that's what they're going to do. That's why I think we might be seeing it. But I don't expect the title to change hands again when they do that. I honestly still believe that if you're going to change the titles here, that Caprice Coleman and Cedric Alexander is the move. I would have been fine with them keeping the titles on Scott as well. But I think if you're going to make this move, I don't know that the Briscoes add any value as the tag team champions. They are an unbelievable team that are so super hot everywhere they go. They're a riot to work with. They are good guys. They wrestle their asses off every single time they go out there. They are the consummate team. They are the team that you want on your roster to build a tag team division around. It's an established tag team division. You're not having to build a division, and I don't know that they do much holding those championships. I think that those championships could have got another team over, could have continued to keep Scum over if you need them as a team, could have gotten Caprice and Cedric over as a team, and you would have been able to do more by not having the Briscoes. By having the Briscoes in chase mode, I think you get more out of them than having them as champions. But we'll see what happens at TV. I think in 2 weeks, maybe, we're having TV right first year. I'll look at the dates and see. But all of that led into our final match of the night, the one everyone was waiting for. It was Kevin Steen retaining the Ring of Honor World Championship 27 minutes, 57 seconds in a Ladder Wars match, and it was a war. I gotta say, it wasn't as brutal, I didn't think, as the one they did in PWG earlier this year on the Steen Wolf event. That one reached a point. Chuck Taylor, who does not wrestle for Ring of Honor, commented with Dragon Gate and with Evolve and Chikara as well. He was calling that match color, and he at one point during that match he said, "Can we just stop this? It's so brutal." You know, I mean. Or something like that. It was unbelievable how rough that match was. It was a very good match. If you haven't seen it, you're really doing yourself a disservice and a poor judgment. So you're doing yourself a disservice. General coach has been a long day and still a lot of day left. But at any rate, this one was not as brutal as that one. It doesn't mean that this one wasn't brutal. There were several broken ladders. We got the first one in 3 minutes. El Generico's back was a total just graveyard, mortuary, just hideous. Welts and laceration and all kinds of stuff on this guy's back. And I mean, it reminded me of the final battle match from 2 years ago, the one that was in the video that they showed the high school as well. Where Generico's back was just, and everyone was over, I thought, it was the most amazing match I believe I've ever seen, and yet, why? His back is, like, I'm so happy I was entertained by that, but I don't know if I'm willing to trade my comfort level for that level of entertainment, because it just, they're so brutal to watch, and a lot of that this way, so again, I think the one thing G is just a different level. They do a powerbomb spot on a ladder across the ropes that looked like it gave none. At least it felt like here most of the ladders gave the way they were supposed to. The one powerbomb spot where Steen built a bridge between two taller ladders and a short ladder, that one looked like it didn't give. The package power driver spot was probably worse on Steen than it was on Generico. The great thing about the package pile driver as a move is that because you hook the arms and the legs are curled up, it looks very, very, very devastating, but as soon as you pick the guy up, he's so far above your thigh. Like, it's almost like you have to push him down on purpose to hit his head to break his neck and spike him. So that, as bad as that looked, it was probably worse for Steen's butt and legs to fall down on the ladder bridge than it was for Generico to take it. Both guys worked hard. I'm interested to see where they go from here. The match ended, and the show essentially ended right then. They had, you know, Steen holding up the title and staggering around while the refs checked on Generico. But that was the end of the show, was the end of this match. And so I didn't get a feel for what comes next. I said all along that I did not think Generico would win the title, definitely because I don't think he's in a contract. There was the belief for the longest time that that Jim Cornette didn't like El Generico, didn't see money in El Generico, and from what I understood, it was just a matter of Generico thought he was worth more money than what they were willing to pay him. And he can make more money being on the independent circuit and going out and getting his own bookings and that sort of thing. So that's why he did what he did. But that's my understanding of how it works. That may not be the case, but that was how the show ended. So no surprise with Kevin Steen retaining. Again, a good show from start to finish. It's one that you should check out. I recommend it. Again, if you're looking for a reason to check out Ring of Honor, see the show. I don't think you're going to leave there going, oh my god, but I think you're leaving there going, these guys have a real chance, and I would like to be a part of that. I would like to watch and see what they can do, and I think you'll enjoy it a lot. I really do. But that is all the time I have. That's your show, your Ring of Honor Final Battle audio review, and again, this is all access for everyone. Don't forget, folks, there's a lot of audio on the site, including later tonight, depending on what you're hearing it, in the Sunday afternoon as I record, about 30 minutes, actually, before the start of TLC. I guess it's about 4 minutes or so before the start of the pre-show, but the actual show itself starts in about 30 minutes. I'm not sure when Jason's going to post this live on the site. It was just before TLC. If he does post it before that pay-per-view, he has your live coverage coming up in just a few minutes, and he will have an audio review as well. That one is members exclusive, so if you want to hear that audio review of TLC, as well as follow along with the show on the ad-free version of the site, talk about it with other .NET members in the .NET member forum, and then write a blog expressing your thoughts about the pay-per-view in our blog section. Just sign up to be a .NET member. Simply head on over to ProWrestling.net, click on the right-hand side of the page where it says .NET member sign up. Sit there and we'll get you started for the $7.50 a month, $5.50 if you take the annual option, save you some money. And again, the road to WrestleMania, I guess you could say, even though the Royal Rumble was technically the first step on the road, the first stop on the road to WrestleMania, in my mind, the build for the Rumble kind of begins the road to WrestleMania because it's built for that moment, and then everything is WrestleMania centered from that point forward, and it's time, you know, with TLC, and then it's time to talk about the Rumble. I will be back probably next Saturday we'll see how it plays out. Maybe next Tuesday night or next Saturday with an all-access SmackDown audio review with Jake Barnett. We'll do that for you guys every week. Thank you guys for watching along Ring of Honor with me today and for listening to this audio review. Thank you everyone for your continued support of the ProWrestling.net site. I will see you back here next time. Until then, everyone have a fantastic time and